This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
And thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be talking about energy, about saving money, using technology, and living a sustainable life. I'm Tim Echols, the host of Energy Matters. My co-host with me, as always, John Noel, former state representative. How's it going, John?
Oh, it's great. I am so excited to hear today from people who are way more physically fit than you and me.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about biking, and I have a little bit of history with biking, little bit, and it's not all pretty, but I'm gonna share that today. In the studio, frequent guest Andrew Saunders, the sustainability officer for Athens Clark County, former UGA grad. I mean, you were a forestry major. I mean, you don't do a lot of biking in the forest, right?
Well, actually, I would argue that some of the funnest biking is in the forest.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. What is that, mountain biking?
Yes, sir.
Don't we have a course down at Fort Yargo, a mountain biking course?
Yeah, and there's even mountain biking in Athens Clark County at Trail Creek. And you can actually ride your mountain bike on the well, you call them the intramural field trails, but I guess it's a forest over there. You can ride your mountain bike and people hike over there.
Well, there we go. Elliot Caldwell's that voice you're hearing. He's director of Georgia Bikes, Emory grad, and master's of social work here at UGA, right?
Yeah, indeed, for sure.
Yeah, and so I have a master's in social work as well, nonprofit organizations. I had a great experience over there. Tom Holland. Dr. Holland was my professor. I learned a lot from him. Also, Tyler Dewey, attorney, Northern Illinois grad. John, I guess you can feel the love there, being the Illinois guy.
Feeling that.
Yeah, and Michigan State. Wow. Yeah. Michigan State, that's a powerhouse up there. I mean, I've got my producer over here just shaking his head. He's not a big Michigan State fan. None of us are really down here. But yeah. Tyler, it's good to have you. You are executive director of Bike Athens.
Indeed.
And, you know, we're going to talk about biking today. And folks may be going, well, how does that fit into Energy Matters? Well, I mean, one, you know, as we talk about scooters, we talk about electric scooters, we talk about mobility and transportation.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we miss sometimes is related to health. I mean, we do talk about air quality, and we talk about making our state a healthier place in regards to water or air. But when you think about exercising and physical fitness and extending your life because of it, then we've got an obesity issue, you know, in kids today. So I want to start there on the mission of Georgia Bikes and Bike Athens. Obviously, you're promoting bikes as a way of transportation and health. Let me start with you, Elliot. Why is biking important? Why should we be talking about it on an energy show?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple reasons. I mean, you brought up the sort of health issues, and it's not just about getting people on bikes. It's providing them safe places for them to bike. So that means looking at infrastructure. That means looking at, you know, how far people's commutes are, how their kids get to school. Can they even bike to school? Can they, can they get to school by a trail, by a sort of a safe way of getting around? So I think, you know, it's looking at what people often refer to as the built environment. And, you know, it has a lot to do with, you know, just how we approach transportation overall. So it can be a challenging environment to work in, but I think most people, when they think about bicycling, they a smile comes to their face. They remember doing it as a kid or maybe as an adult or, some people.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of people generally like bicycles. So we try to, you know, bring that out when we talk about it.
You know, Tyler, I think about Athens. I have 3 degrees from University of Georgia. I've spent a lot of time here, lived here. Biking is really a part of the DNA, it seems like, of this community, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think certainly with the Athens Twilight being based here for 40 years, you know, there's a ton of people who travel for tourism for Athens because they've heard it has such a great reputation for riding the rural roads just outside of downtown are just gorgeous, and you get to see a lot of the sites around there. And just with the energy of the university, I think bicycling has always been seen as a valid form of transportation in town. So I know we get calls quite often at Bike Athens from people who are moving to town and want to know more about where they can ride, where they should live, that it's easiest to ride, and where they can maybe not use this car as much as they would in other parts of the town.
And you mentioned our Twilight event here, but when you have companies like Jittery Joe's and other corporate partners who are promoting this and sponsoring teams, it really just adds to the momentum, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We see the Charlie Mustard and the folks at Jittery Joe's with the Bike is the Answer artwork that they're putting all over town. It just makes it just something that everyone sort of gets and understands and knows when they think about Athens. Oftentimes they think about the ways that they see people on bike riding around town all the time.
So, Andrew, you know, we've talked a lot on this show about elected officials, building relationships with elected officials. As you work with, obviously, your bosses are, you know, the city, you know, the county commission here, and we have a unified government here. I mean, do the elected officials here in Athens see the biking community as a constituency in and of itself?
Oh, you better not ignore the biking community as a constituency, because they can mobilize with a serious force. So yes, they are well respected, and I would say that they're pretty effective at what they do. They're not going to come beat you up. They're going to present information and engage with our elected officials about specific sites and improvements that can be made.
And how has the county responded to that? Have y'all spent some money on that and making riding a bike safer in town, or to give more options? Or what's the county and the leadership done?
Well, so we are making improvements. I don't know that they're as fast as we would all like, but about a year ago, year and a half ago, our residents passed T-SPLOST, a sales tax specific to transportation, and there was about $40 million in bike infrastructure.
That's a lot of money.
Dedicated to the rail trails, the greenways, on-street bike facilities, and so we're now starting to see that manifest itself in our community.
And we're starting to see that too, sort of as we're waiting for the T-SPLOST dollars to accumulate before those can go online. We're seeing some behind-the-scene changes to boost the human capital. So the county recently hired a bike and pedestrian safety coordinator to specifically look at bicycle and safety projects and improvements. And then there are applications out now to be a part of the Athens in Motion Commission, which will be a public body to help implement a active transportation plan.
Yeah, and outside of Atlanta, not a lot of Georgia cities have like a bike ped coordinator on staff or a commission similar to that. So I think that's kind of a big push that at a state level, we would say, you know, if a city really wants to become more bicycle pedestrian friendly, having someone on their planning staff or transportation staff that actually focuses on that issue day to day, coordinating with leisure services who generally, or parks and rec who are generally looking at greenways and parks, you know, talking to the people who are actually restriping or refinishing roads, because, you know, you can do a lot with bike lanes just when you're resurfacing a road. So having a person in position in government to kind of help coordinate that is a big deal. And Athens has a bike czar. It actually, that position is funded by a grant through the Blank Foundation, because the Atlanta Falcons and Arthur Blank, and I guess Thomas Dimitrov is a big cyclist, big time cyclist. And so the Blank Foundation actually gave City of Atlanta a grant to have this bike czar position, and her job is to really kind of tie a lot of those loose ends together in the City of Atlanta. So I think you're starting to see that more in cities, that, and particularly in Georgia, knowing that really you to build bike infrastructure and to become more bike friendly, you kind of need to have folks in city government pushing that along the
way. So as you think about, we said Atlanta, Athens, what are some other cities where you would say there's a biking revival going on?
I would say Savannah. And I think there's been people riding bikes in Savannah forever, at least partially because it's so flat. And so you've got that mix of tourists. I mean, whether it's folks from Georgia, and people come from Europe to come to Savannah and walk around and bike around. So I think from a tourism perspective, but also because, you know, you've got a lot of service industry workers down there that ride bikes, and it's a lot of, you know, folks just rolling around on cruisers. So it's that interesting mix of everyone from, you know, Dutch tourists to local service industry workers in Savannah. So there's a real, I'd say, robust, you know, community there. But also, honestly, the mountains in North Georgia, between Dahlonega and then in places like Mulberry Gap, which is like a mountain bike retreat getaway. I'd say, you know, it's not dense, but North Georgia has this amazing mountain bike, road bike, you know, culture up there that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, speaking of Holland and the Dutch, you know, I was in both Amsterdam and Rotterdam, and frankly, I've never seen so many bikes on the road. Oh. And it wasn't, you know, spandex wearing bikers. And, you know, I don't know what our listeners are thinking when they think of bikers, but these were, you know, these look like just old-fashioned bikes.
Yeah.
you know, with a little basket on it or something. They're carrying stuff, I mean, you know, baguettes, different things out the back, and they're just driving along, hundreds, thousands of them. What have they done over there to create such a culture for the everyday person, including a lot of elderly people, to ride bikes?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that they view transportation planning and the building of infrastructure through that lens of getting people on bikes as a valued good. And I mean, that wasn't forever. I mean, I think what, in the 1950s and 60s, yeah. The Netherlands was as car focused, maybe you could say, as planning was here, transportation planning here.
But right, I did not know that history.
And Denmark as well. I mean, Denmark sort of gets high marks for being very bicycle. Copenhagen gets very high marks for being bicycle friendly. But again, that wasn't always that way. It was only, say, 40, 50 years ago that they made decisions. And again, part of it was based on, I think, health and safety. But part of it, I think, is based on kind of community vitality as well.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Andrew, there was a device that this company I had met with over there had created. It was called the Bike Scout. I don't know if you all have heard of the Bike Scout, but this was a device that you would put at a curb cut as you're pulling out of a business, and it would sense whether there's a biker coming on either side, and then it would give a red light, green light right there as you're pulling out. And they had these Bike Scouts everywhere to really make sure that motorists didn't pull out and hit a biker. You guys looked at stuff like that here?
We're fresh out of Bike Scouts in Athens. But there is some new technology. So one of the things that I've been interested in is the distance measuring stuff on bikes that allows us to ensure that they're getting 3 feet of safety from vehicular drivers. And so that's something I'd like to see come out.
Well, let's keep talking about bikes here, because it is a great form of alternative energy, that's for sure. I'm Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters. Stick around, and we're going to learn more about Georgia Bikes and Bike Athens.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
John, one of our sponsors for the show, Rowe Insulating Company, is doing a great job in and around Athens, being able to do a lot of what we talk about every single week on the show.
Every time it gets cold, every time it gets hot, it's always that attic that's the problem. And you could attack windows, and that's going to cost you a cold fortune. It is insulation that can solve the problem.
Hey, if you want to get this fixed, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Rowe. Support for Energy Matters comes from Arnold, Golden, and Gregory. AGG takes a business sensibility approach when advising clients. AGG provides industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief, not if, but how. We appreciate their weekly support of Energy Matters.
Thanks, John. I'm Tim Eccles. I'm the host of Energy Matters. John Noel, my co-host. We're talking about bikes. We're talking about Bike Athens. We're talking about bikes across Georgia. We're talking about Georgia Bikes. We've got Elliot Caldwell, the executive director of Georgia Bikes, in the studio. Elliot, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
And Tyler Dewey, the executive director of Bike Athens, a Michigan State lawyer.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. You're overqualified for your job, I guess.
My parents certainly think so.
Yeah, yeah. And Andrew Saunders, frequent and regular guest, the sustainability officer for Athens Clark County. Hey, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you back. Well, I promised to tell a quick bike story. You know, John, when I was here, and I lived on campus the first year, and then we moved over into the Chicopee Mill area of Athens, First Street. And in order to get to First Street, I had a car, but for whatever reason, my uncle gave me a 10-speed bike, and I don't even know if they made bike helmets in 1979. I'm sure they did, but he gave me this bike, and I decided I was going to bike back and forth, you know, to campus, save some gas. And so to get to First Street, you had to go down the hill and cross the river, and there was a red light right there at the river as you tried to cross it, and then up a very big hill. And so,
boy, you better make that light.
Yeah. So what I did in my engineering mind, which I really don't have, is I figured out, okay, I can start going at this time, even though the light's red, and I counted the seconds on the light and to anticipate it turning green, so I didn't have to stop and then try to, you know, Tour de France up the hill.
Great idea.
You know, to get over to 208 First Street. And so this bike was not a quality bike. It was one of the Swins or one of the cheaper brands. And unfortunately, and this was, I think, the last time I ever biked during that time. I was there doing my counting, and then I pushed really hard on the pedal, and the chain slipped. And with that momentum, it threw me over the handlebars, and I skid down the hill on my, basically on my forearms. No helmet. Fortunately, I didn't hit my head, but it was very painful. I walked the bike because it was damaged somehow in that episode, and I walked the bike up there. My pharmacy roommate said, "Hey, I can help you with that." Took rubbing alcohol and just about killed me all over my arms. So, Tyler, it was a bad experience.
That sounds like a bad experience.
Yeah, a bad experience for me. Kind of ruined my life for biking. But that's my bike Athens story. You know, you guys are working with folks that have better bikes than I did, and you're working with folks that have some old bikes, and maybe they want to recycle those bikes. What do you do with a bike? You don't put it in your trash bin, do you?
No, we don't. Or certainly we try to avoid that. That is the move of last resort. So we work with a lot of nonprofit and social service agencies across town who are working with clients who maybe can't afford a car yet, maybe can't drive yet, but need a way to get to work, need a way to get around town, need to get to appointments, need to get to the doctor. And so we take donated bikes from the community, we refurbish them, and we give them back to the community in form of free transportation. So when folks are at the Athens area homeless shelter or Advantage Behavioral Health or a lot of the other social services, they need a job, they need to get to work in a little bit more efficient manner. Oftentimes these are folks who might be working third shift, so they can't use the bus system to get to work. We provide them with a free bike, lights, lock, and a helmet. And then we do all the subsequent maintenance for free as well. So they can keep bringing the bike to us for any sort of repairs, flats, chain falling off, wheels getting knocked out of true, and we'll fix it up. So we've been doing that for about 14 years now.
Wow.
It's been growing and growing.
There's no mileage counters on those bikes, but I think if you were to add up all the miles that people have put on those bikes, it's, you know, hundreds of thousands.
See, but I'd want to know the stories of those bikes.
Of course.
So, like, I have a friend who's actually used the bike recycling program, and it just absolutely changes his life for how he can get around and what kind of opportunities are available to him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and John, this is just a great story of how the nonprofit sector, right, can take a problem and really do a job that government doesn't necessarily need to do.
I agree with that.
And here they're doing it at no cost to taxpayers.
Right.
So it's really a great story.
What government can do is step in and make sure that there are bike lanes and can pass T-SPLOS like Athens-Clark County did, that helps fund a infrastructure that allows safe biking, which then these nonprofits can do.
And John, you are absolutely right that if we've got an unsafe environment out there, and I can't tell you how nervous I am as a motorist passing a biker. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what is the correct protocol for motorists listening to this show? They're on a state highway that's not that wide. They see some bikes up ahead. What is the appropriate protocol for a motorist as you approach bikers if they're going in the same direction as you?
Yeah, so, I mean, state law requires, you know, give 3 feet to pass when you're passing a cyclist. And again, it's from the widest part of your car to the widest part of their bike. So that means, you know, if you've got a truck with some maybe pretty big mirrors, that means from the edge of the mirror, not from the cab or the vehicle, what have you. And that means all the way to their handlebars, not just to the body of the person riding the bike. So giving 3 feet to pass. And, you know, I think the biggest challenge we see is folks thinking they can get around that blind curve, you know, without maybe hitting their brakes before they try to pass a cyclist. Slowing down a little bit, giving a little more room, making sure you have a good sight line to go around them. is, I think, maybe one of the most important things, because that's safer for you. No car driver actually wants to hit someone riding a bike, and it's certainly safer for the vulnerable user, because a bicyclist doesn't have a car surrounding them to protect them. So 3 feet to pass, and make sure you give, you're being safe when you're passing.
So Tyler, as a biker, you're out there. Is it nerve-wracking? Is it scary, dealing with traffic?
It certainly gets less intimidating the more you do it. At this point, I've been riding bikes for so long, I don't think anything of it. It's just how I get around town. I find it's faster. I find it more pleasurable to get around by bike, so it's not something I think about. But certainly when we're out in the public talking to folks, one of by far the most common reason we hear for why people don't bike, it's not because of the hills and it's not because it's the heat, it's because the fear of traffic, which is why Bike Athens has so long tried to get more bike lanes, more bike paths in town, because it just makes it seem more accessible and easier for a lot of people to get over that initial fear of sharing the road with traffic. And so I think once we get more people out there, once people get riding, they see it's a lot easier and less scary than it may first seem.
Andrew, coming to you, and thinking about public policy, are you seeing your colleagues in cities and counties think more about bike lanes? And is it a big expenditure? How are they funding it?
Well, it is a big expenditure. But what I want to point out is that especially when you get to the off-road paths, those things fund themselves. They are economic drivers like you can't imagine. You see that at the Beltline around Atlanta, and we see it in Athens. As soon as we build that path, we have businesses that are trying to position themselves, or homeowners that want to be close to that amenity. And so we find that the tax revenue goes up. But other than that, we fund out of SPLOST, which is a sales tax. We fund out of our general fund, which is property taxes and user fees. But one thing I've always appreciated about these two gentlemen is that they'll tell you that the multi-million dollar trail is not the only solution. Sometimes it's just as easy as changing the stripe when you're repaving a road.
Yep. Or signage, directing people to lower traffic neighborhood roadways that might be, conducive to riding a bike, particularly if you've got a family or, riding with your kids or maybe a newer rider. There are a lot of ways to get around, even if it's just a couple of blocks, using a neighborhood street that's lower traffic and calmer. So
I would also argue that a bike-friendly environment is an economic driver in itself, not just
very much so.
Yeah, I mean, people because the people that kind of want to come and work in those environments tend to be more educated, tends to be a very high-tech environment, and Athens wants to facilitate that.
Well, sorry, Andrew, but it's something we also see that, the nice thing from an economic perspective is that bikes can't travel as far or as fast. So generally, the people who are getting around on a bike are spending their dollars locally versus driving their dollars outside of the community.
Ooh, I like it.
And then if we look at businesses in town, so everybody who comes to town wants to be seen. They want that sign out front. They want people to know where they're at. Well, when you modify a road for safe biking and walking, you're slowing down the cars too, and now suddenly everybody recognizes that business because they're not going by at 65.
That's another good point. On the economic side, has anybody quantified how much money you save biking versus carring?
There have been a lot of studies, and it's difficult, depending on the form of the study, to find out exactly what that figure is.
How much do you guys think you've saved? You bike all the time. You biked here at the station.
Absolutely. It was a short drive from the office.
I would guess somewhere in the hundreds to a couple thousand a year. But I also, for work, we also have to drive sometimes. I have to drive around the state to meet with different elected officials and local
right.
folks. So it's sometimes being a bike advocate, I actually spend a lot of time in my car, which is sometimes
So let's see. The upside is you're healthier and you save money.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Okay.
For sure.
Just want to check
I think there's that sense of, again, community vitality. When you're out on a bike, you'll end up running into your neighbors. You'll see friends out. You're not just stuck in the car the whole time. You actually might get to see folks in your community a bit more as well, which I think is a nice thing.
Well, if we wrap up this segment with you guys, thanks so much for being with us. What is the future as you think about public policy and biking? If you look over the next 10 or 15 years, where are we going?
I'd say we are moving towards a place where bicycles are becoming a more interdependent part of transportation systems in the state. I think the growth of, again, e-bikes, has a very strong potential to really expand the range of not just the distance that people are able to travel, but the kinds of folks that can get on bikes. So older folks, younger folks, people with disabilities.
Well, great. It's been a good segment as we've learned more about biking. I'm Tim Eccles, your host, and we're going to continue to talk about technology and energy, how to save money. But I've really appreciated you guys coming on and sharing your story with us. Thank you very much, and I hope you'll continue to tune in to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Eccles.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Sterling Planet.
Support for Energy Matters comes from Sterling Planet. Sunny and Alden and all the folks down at Sterling Planet want to help you meet your environmental and business goals with renewable energy. From understanding RECs, or renewable energy certificates, to a carbon offset plan, to innovative white tags, which are energy efficiency certificates, they can help you navigate the corporate green energy world. See more at sterlingplanet.com.
We interrupt this episode of Energy Matters to take you outdoors.
On the road again. I'm John Noel. We're doing an on-the-road segment, Perspectives on Climate, here at Energy Matters. We didn't have to go far down the road because it's Andrew Saunders. Andrew is the Athens guru of all things sustainability, and he gave us your official title. I like to say guru because it means that you know everything, and every time I talk to you, you seem to know everything. You know, you're kind of like a know-it-all.
I actually have a sign in my office that says, if you can't dazzle them with your brilliance, baffle them with your BS. And that may actually refer to my career.
Oh, no, not your career. In fact, we're going to do a little quizzing and questioning on you now. This segment is called Perspectives on Climate. And I want to know from you, what keeps you up at night when you think about climate threats to Athens-Clark County?
Yeah, so the ones that worry me the most, I've actually been through in Athens for one of our most severe droughts, and we're likely to continue to experience those. Mm. And then on the flip side, we see flooding, heat waves, and tornadoes, hurricanes, just kind of major storm events.
Well, our climate change denying friends will say, well, we always seen tornadoes, we always seen droughts, we've always seen this, but what I think people fail to remember is that as the climate is changing, and it is changing, we are now seeing significantly more rain with periods of significantly more drought. Mm-hmm. So whether you buy into that or not, to the listening audience, let's just say we know we've got major drought events. How does Athens-Clark County deal with major drought events?
So the first and foremost is Athens derives its water from the two rivers, but we do have a reservoir that we share with other communities, and that reservoir for us is not our primary source, so it's strictly for drinking water.
Will the rivers dry up?
Oh, they have. I've seen the river where you could step across it.
Holy
And moly. This is a river that you can, for context, for people who don't live in Athens, you could fish in it, it would be hard to swim across it on a busy day.
Wow.
Not Chattahoochee size, but significant. And I've absolutely seen that riverbed dry.
And that's the major source of the city's
water.
That's
right.
So what happens then? You start drawing from your reservoir?
So we draw off the reservoir. But another thing we're looking at, because we have projections that say that within the next 35 years, there's a better than 50% chance that we'll outlast or outpace our water supplies. So we're actually looking into a water reuse system where we're taking water that's treated at the waste plants and put back into the community for irrigation or industrial uses, or even is blended with river water for drinking purposes.
Interesting. All right. So it sounds like y'all are already thinking about the drought stuff, and in part because you and others probably stared at the river one day and went, holy smokes, there's like no water there anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So that gets water kind of out. What about now when you're dealing with tornadoes and things like that? Do you see, is your reference point long enough? Have you heard, are we seeing more tornadoes, less tornadoes? And what are those impacts and what are the responses?
You know, I don't have good data for you on tornadoes. Athens has a history with tornadoes that goes back, I mean, well documented 50 years. Mm-hmm. What I would say we're seeing a lot more leftover remnants of hurricanes.
That's right.
And major storm events. So each of the past 2 years, we've had pretty major hurricanes come through.
Mm-hmm.
And those are a big problem for us. Excessive rain, we get some flooding, we get a lot of tree issues because Athens is a
very
city
green
within the forest, right?
Yeah. Do you say that city in the forest?
Just today I did. But
yeah, yeah. But well, they do in Atlanta. They call it a city in the forest.
Well,
yeah.
And we've got almost twice as much canopy as they do. So
is
we're
that
really
right?
Forested. Yeah, we just updated it. We're at 63% still.
That is really cool. Okay. All right. Good. So major hurricanes are really impacting Athens. And, oh, by the way, we're seeing more and more hurricanes. And, oh, by the way, we're seeing more and more severe hurricanes. And, oh, by the way, the most severe hurricane to hit the United States, or to hit Georgia, rather, was just this last year. So Athens gets all the benefits of these new trends.
Yes.
Interesting. All right. What about the people that are fleeing? So everybody thinks back to Katrina. And those things are happening again. So do they get up here or do they just stay in Atlanta?
No, they absolutely get here. So they're referred to as climate refugees.
Climate refugees.
And there are short-term refugees and long-term refugees. So for example, on the last year's hurricane, or maybe it was 2 years ago, I had some grandparents that lived over on the South Carolina coast.
Right.
They actually came to Georgia to get away from the hurricane.
Did they stay with you?
No, they stay with my father, luckily.
Okay, so that worked out nice.
We won't tell them, but having grandma and granddad in the house during a hurricane is not at the top of my list.
That's funny.
But what's interesting is that Athens still gets hit. So with both of the last two hurricanes, we've actually had people migrate from the coast to Athens. It seems to be perceived as a safe distance. And then the hurricanes have turned and come for Athens.
No kidding.
So that's the short-term condition, but we still have people in our community and communities across the United States that left Katrina, and realistically, they'll never go back. And what we see on long-term refugees is, you know, you and I, we can afford to leave. We can go set up a new life and probably get new jobs and be pretty well off.
That's right.
But it's really the lower income folks that are hardest displaced because they don't have housing. They don't have family connections many times. The jobs are more competitive or aren't there. Mm-hmm. And so it is a truly transformational life event.
That's right. You see the devastation. Well, you saw it in Katrina. There's the complete devastation. So when we are seeing these climate changes, and I've been doing some study on this through the Climate Reality Project, did some training in Atlanta this year. They are now talking about things called rain bombs. You see these typically in the Midwest and other places where the atmosphere accumulates so much, an enormous amount of water, and then dumps it one time. And that sort of event over a long period of time happened in Houston when the hurricane came in, and we saw this massive flooding. And I do not know how the city dealt with it. Well, they didn't deal with it. They just were overwhelmed by it. Same kind of thing can happen in New Orleans, and the same kind of thing. Could it happen here, or is the architecture of the lay of the land, basically? We're not at Houston. We're not down in a crevasse.
It could happen here. It does happen here to a lesser extent. So in the past year, we've had 2 6-inch rain events in a 24-hour period.
Wow.
For context, you're only supposed to have one of those every 50 to 100 years.
So look, let's go back.
Yeah.
Science man, as we are uneducated. I mean, you know, we're lay science people.
Mm-hmm.
You've had 2 6-inch rain events. It was just defined as 6 inches over 24 hours, I presume. Mm-hmm. 2 6-inch rain events, and those are supposed to be one in a 50-year event?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Okay.
So, and that's why when you hear people say, like, oh, climate's always been bad, we've always had hurricanes, we've always had fires, you're absolutely right. I don't dispute that an event at all. But what we have is we know how often these things have historically occurred, and we can show you the data that over the last 15 years, it just happens a heck of a lot more often, to the point that we'll eventually have to update those statistics, yeah, which changes insurance, changes land use planning, changes transportation.
Right.
It's kind of nuts.
That is major nuts, and it's one of the reasons why I'm so. It's my number one issue, really, is climate change. I just think it's something we all ought to be paying attention to. So we talked about drought. We've talked about hurricanes. When the proverbial stuff hits the fan, is there a bunker? Does the city have a place? I know Atlanta's got like a command center.
Yeah.
And some of these other cities, now these bigger cities, but does it where does the leadership in Athens huddle when stuff's going on bad?
So we have a dedicated emergency operations center, and we call in a storm. We call in folks from public works, mm-hmm, and from fire and police and anybody who can help clean up debris or respond to health crises. Mm-hmm. We also have a mobile command center. So if that you know, command the fixed place, the bunker, so to speak, was taken out, we have, mm-hmm, the ability to take that show on the road. Mm-hmm. We have a mobile
Land Force One.
That's right. Yeah, we won't go in the air.
You won't go in the air, but you will do it on the ground.
Another thing I love about this town is we have a comms van. So we have this weird van that when we get folks from the state, Forestry Commission, State Patrol, you name it, other jurisdictions, we can put everybody on the same radio network. And if you think about smaller or remote jurisdictions, that's a major problem. When help shows up into town, if they're not speaking on the same radio as you are, you can't talk to them. So we have that ability here.
So what does it do? Does it just links all these different frequencies and?
I wish I was smart enough to tell you. All I know is everybody hands their radios to the smart gentleman in the van, and they come back working. Right.
That is amazing. That's pretty cool technology. And you know, you could have made something up, because like that bumper sticker on the on your door says, what does that thing say?
If you can't dazzle them with your brilliance, baffle them with your BS.
That is some funny stuff. All right. Well, I want to thank Andrew Saunders for this, because I am of the belief that the climate is rapidly changing, that we are experiencing. It's evident. Your story is a good one. It's evident that Athens is being impacted by greater severity of both rain and greater severity of droughts. This is not just true in Athens. It's true in Atlanta. It's true around the country. And we are all hostages to this climate. And I think the beauty of this radio program is we know there are solutions to solve the problem, and we all can do something about it. And that's what Energy Matters wants to do. We want to talk about sustainability. We want to tell you about new technologies. We want you to save money, but we also understand that it's important to save the planet. So I'm John Noel, New Energy Guy on Twitter, and we'll look forward to this next roadshow with Energy Matters. Thanks for joining us on Perspectives in Climate.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Hey, it's Commissioner Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters. I want to tell you about Kevin Rowe and Rowe Insulating Company. If you need insulation anywhere within 60 miles of Athens, Georgia, you need to call 706-795-2854. It's important, isn't it, John?
It is the most important thing you can do in your house.
It's the low-hanging fruit of everything that we talk about on Energy Matters every single week.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, call 706-795-2854. That's 706-795-2854. Rowe Insulating Company.
Get comfortable. Sp-
Support for Energy Matters comes from Sterling Planet. Sunny and Alden and all the folks down at Sterling Planet want to help you meet your environmental and business goals with renewable energy. From understanding RECs, or renewable energy certificates, to a carbon offset plan, to innovative white tags, which are energy efficiency certificates, they can help you navigate the corporate green energy world. See more at sterlingplanet.com.
Welcome to Energy Matters on the Road. I'm your host, Tim Eccles, and in this segment, a special treat to have Reverend Mitch Hescock, and he is on the phone with me from Pennsylvania. Welcome, Reverend.
Thank you, sir. It's glad. Please call me Mitch. I'm not very formal.
And Mitch, tell us where you went to school and where you went to seminary.
Well, I went to seminary. Actually, it's part of a longer story, but I was running away from God from Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and went out to the University of Arizona. And there I found God again, and then I moved back to Pennsylvania. And then after a career in the coal industry for 14 years, I went to seminary in Washington, D.C. at Wesley Seminary, and served a local church for 20 years.
So you are very active in the energy and the climate movement, and you've got a book you've co-authored called Caring for Creation, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. And you and I've talked before, but I find myself as an evangelical, and tell me if this is the case with you, but I'll wind up in meetings with environmentalists, where here I'm talking about God and God creating the world, and folks don't really have that worldview, and things can go south pretty quick, and people can get hostile. Have you discovered or experienced that?
Absolutely. You know, especially when I talk that I'm being pro-life in a crowd that's much more progressive than I am. And, you know, there have been times where I've actually been booed or hissed at for saying that I've been pro-life. But I am pro-life. I believe that we have a responsibility to protect life from conception until natural death. In fact, that's what our ministry is all about. Our slogan is creation care is a matter of life. And why we do environmental work and energy work is, number one, because God told us to. It's God's creation. And number two, Jesus said to protect the least of these, and they are the ones most impacted by the way we use energy and the way the pollution hurts them.
You know, Mitch, as I regulate energy here in Georgia with my colleagues on the Public Service Commission, I'm a Republican, and, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric out there about climate change, and you're involved with creation care. How does creation care differ from the run-of-the-mill climate change rhetoric that I'm hearing on CNN or any other station?
Well, I think first off, it begins with faith. I mean, I believe very strongly that in the beginning, God created. Psalm 24 says, the earth is the Lord's. Even Leviticus says, the earth is God's, and we are but tenants. We don't earn the earth. And so I grew up, if something belongs to somebody else, you're supposed to take care of it. So to me, it's a matter of following Jesus. It's an act of Christian faith, caring for what God owns. And that's what I think makes our ministry different, is that, you know, I believe in God with all my heart. In fact, I tell people that I'm not an environmentalist, that I am simply a disciple of Jesus Christ trying to care for what he owns. Because remember, Colossians chapter 1 says that the whole earth was formed through, by, and for Jesus Christ. Not for us, but for Jesus.
You know, Mitch, I hear folks talking about, you know, hey, we're gonna destroy the planet. The earth is going to, you know, as a result of, you know, industry or CO2, that, you know, that the planet, you know, the planet's future is at risk. As an evangelical, where do you stand on, you know, on how this earth will end? Is it something that you believe that, you know, will happen only when God gives the green light for that to happen? Or do you believe that we actually have, you know, are at risk of destroying the planet ourselves?
Well, I mean, I think I'd answer that two ways. First, even with high CO2 levels, the planet is going to take care of itself eventually. The high CO2 and climate change, what I worry about are God's children, us, because we're the ones that are going to suffer, not the planet. But to answer your final question, excuse me, you know, Revelation 21 says that the whole earth will be renewed, will be recreated. And that's what my theology is, that God will come, heaven comes to earth, and it will be renewed. And quite honestly, to me, the way I like to think about it, if it's a massive do-over where God comes and lives on this earth and actually recreates the Garden of Eden and walks with his people, that's what Revelation says. So to me, it's about the earth. It's not as much of a problem as what we're doing to our children and our grandkids and what's happening right now around the world because of our changing climate.
You know, I have seven children, and back when my kids were little, and I would, you know, like give my wife a morning off and, you know, say, hey, I'm going to take all the kids. And, I'd take them in a grocery store or something, and I would have people come up to me, point their finger in my face, and lecture me about using too many resources and that we need to reduce the population. And this has been one of the major problems I've had with this current climate change movement, is this message they have about population control and about not having children, and just sending this message that, you know, that kids are really a liability to the planet. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the first thing is that everybody needs to listen to God, to how many children that God's calling them to have. But more importantly, I don't believe in population control. As I said, I'm a pro-life Christian. But what I do believe in and what I do realize is that we have a very poor system of sharing and of stewardship with all of our brothers and sisters worldwide. If all of us would do a better job of sharing the resources God provided, it would be a lot better off for the 7 billion people on this planet. And that comes right down to pollution. You know, pollution around the world kills 9 million people a year. That's three times more people than tuberculosis, malaria, and AIDS kills, and 10 times more than any form of violence around the world. That's staggering. The pollution kills more than disease and more than war and violence.
So this kind of
This
kind of speaks to the importance of recycling, and we promote that on Energy Matters. Though a lot of trash companies won't take glass in the recycle bin, so that winds up in the landfill. It seems like, you know, plastic now is becoming more difficult. How important is the handling of this waste to you, and what do you tell folks there?
Well, absolutely, and I think that begins with, again, good stewardship. You know, use as little, especially single-use plastic, as you can. You know, have your own stainless steel water bottle and take it with you. I love to drink iced tea, and I have this great big stainless steel cup that holds ice for 10 hours, and I fill it up every morning and with ice and keep topping it off with my iced tea so I don't have to reuse it. And so people can use, if they're going to an outside picnic, take your own reusable dishes with you. When I was a local church pastor, to get away from using so many disposable products, we would invite people to bring their own place settings with them. Or if not, there are certainly relatively inexpensive compostable products, plates, knives, and forks out there in the market today. And, you know, do the simple things. Take care of it yourself. I mean, I'm rebuilding my own compost bin in my own backyard as we speak. That's what I'm going to be doing after this phone call. I take all of our table scraps and compost them and turn them into to compost for my vegetable and flower gardens. Actually, it's my wife's flower gardens, my vegetable garden. But I think the thing that we need to use is it starts with being good stewards. Yes, recycling is important, but reducing the amount of waste is even more important.
Let's turn our final topic back to energy. So what would be a creation care person's perspective on how to generate electricity or use natural gas?
Well, I think the one thing that I want to do is we want to limit the pollution that's out there. And obviously, carbon dioxide has now reached over 415 parts per million. That's, you know, almost 50% more than God intended this world to hold. You know, in the biblical times, it averaged about 270 parts per million. And now we're over 400. We've put a great big blanket on top of the earth. In fact, you know, in the whole sort of Atlanta, Athens area, the temperature is going up, and it's, you know, it's demonstrable. It's Atlanta, it's gone up about over 3 degrees Fahrenheit since 1970. You know, in Georgia, it's gone up over 2 degrees. And that's getting to the point now where, you know, it's coming to the point of sort of no return, that we have to do something about it before the worst impacts are going to happen. And, you know, we're already seeing sea level rise, you know, on the coast of Georgia. It's one of the reasons Representative Carter is very interested in working on climate change, because we're seeing sea level rise destroy stuff because both the melting polar ice caps and just the water expanding. See it in the hurricanes that are now so extreme. You know, when Michael hit the Florida panhandle just south of you guys last fall, the Gulf of Mexico water temperature was 8 degrees warmer than the 20th century average. And hotter water to a hurricane is like a steroid. It just pumps it up and makes it stronger.
Wow, this is fascinating stuff. Tell folks where they can get your book.
They can get the book on Amazon. They can get it on our website, creationcare.org. And, I'd love to chat with them and invite me to their church. We'll be happy to have, you know, we'll travel anywhere to share the good news that, you know, God is the Lord of the creation, and we have to do a better job being good stewards for the sake of our kids.
Well, thank you very much. You've been listening to Reverend Mitch Hescock. I'm Tim Eccles, and this has been Energy Matters on the Road.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit. And the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Eccles and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.